Live all across the United States and Canada and around the world, we're on the air because truth matters. This is the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by Hank Hanegraaff. Hank is president of the Christian Research Institute. At CRI, we desire to equip you to defend the Bible and historic Christianity because truth matters. To join us on air to ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, which translates to 888-275-4265. And now, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and I want to open the broadcast today, before we go to questions, with a discussion on a piece that ran in USA Today's forum. It's titled Hypocrisy and Gay Marriage. The subtitle, The Institution of Marriage, So Sacred, So Pure, So Perfect, is in jeopardy because gay men and lesbians want in on the act. And then these words, how silly, how arbitrary, how disconnected from the real world. This article by Kirsten Powers, who is a freelance writer and a political analyst on Fox News, goes on to point out that when novelist Anne Frank, or I should say Anne Rice, declared this year that she was quitting Christianity, she did so in part because she refused to be anti-gay. And that struck a nerve with many Christians. I wrote about this Facebook entry by Anne Rice in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. Of course, Anne Rice is the famous author of the Vampire Chronicles. And she announced recently on Facebook that she quit being a Christian. And the number one reason was, she said, I refuse to be anti-gay. And we should say as Christians, for the record, not only for the benefit of Anne Rice, but everyone else who is interested in truth, that Christianity is not anti-gay. Christians are called to love homosexuals. But the Bible does not say that being gay is an identity. The Bible describes homosexuality as a behavior. And homosexual behavior does not help anyone. We are indeed anti-gay only when we refuse to tell the truth about the subject of homosexuality. Of course, Rice also, and I talk about it in the article in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal, says, I refuse to be anti-feminist, as though to be Christian means to be anti-feminist. Again, Christianity is not anti-feminist. It is Christianity that empowered women in the West. And secularism, on the other hand, that has once again objectified women. She says, I refuse to be anti-science. I refuse to be anti-life. Well, Christianity is anything but anti-science. It was Christians who discovered and formulated the great laws of science. It was a Christian worldview that provided the necessary preconditions for the development of science to begin with. Science is not an exclusively secular domain. And certainly neo-Darwinian evolution is not science. It flies in the face of empirical science. I'm not so sure why Anne Rice says that Christianity is anti-science, but perhaps she's alluding to embryonic stem cell research. If that's the case, she needs to recognize that science has demonstrated that a fertilized human egg is not simply an it. A fertilized human egg is a human being. 19th century science was what considered this young life little more than a blob of gelatin, but not so in an age of scientific enlightenment. Although an embryo does not have fully developed personality, he or she is fully a person, and that's science. To say otherwise is not only anti-science, it is anti-life. But back to the article in the forum. According to Kirsten Powers, if you say that you do not believe in homosexuality, you're exhibiting something. And what you are exhibiting is anti-gay bigotry. I want to bring in on the discussion Joe Dallas. Joe Dallas is a contributor to the Christian Research Journal. And Joe knows this subject as intimately and personally as anyone that I've ever interviewed. And I want to get your perspective, Joe, on this article and what's going on in a culture in which it seems that we as Christians are being banned or silenced for making any comments on homosexuality, because if we do, we are labeled as hypocrites, we are demonized as anti-gay bigots, and we're virtually being silenced by these kinds of monikers.
Well, I would agree, Hank, and I think this is part of a trend we've seen developing for years now. There are two words or two concepts that are being redefined as we speak. The concept of normal and the concept of hatred. As a culture, we used to agree that sexual relations between people of the same sex were abnormal. Now, the culture began shifting in the late 60s and most noticeably in the 70s towards a normalization of homosexuality. And so we've seen the redefinition of sexually normal behavior to now include homosexuality as sexually normal. Simultaneously, and to me even more disturbing, we have seen a redefinition of the term hatred. Reasonable people will agree that you can disagree without hating. But the reasonable element has been taken out of this argument, as I think this particular article illustrates, so that people who believe that homosexuality is abnormal and or is not what our Creator intended do not just have a conviction, they are anti-gay bigots. So we've seen the redefinition of the term hatred to include simple disagreement. And that should disturb anybody beyond this issue of homosexuality when people are deemed hateful for holding a conviction based on their worldview. That is a setup for some very serious repercussions. So this is a disturbing article that you're quoting.
And what she does at the very beginning of this article is she says, and I'll quote this, "The recent spate of gay teen suicides has thrust the issue of anti-gay bigotry back into the spotlight. Christian leaders are rethinking their approach to this issue. Exodus International, a Christian activist ex-gay group, pulled its sponsorship of the annual Day of Truth, where high school students are encouraged to express their disapproval of homosexuality. But why did it take multiple suicides to make a Christian group realize that heaping condemnation and judgment on others is not its job?" And inculcated in this language is the notion that if we say something about homosexuality, such as the Bible puts parameters around our sexual lives so that our joy might be complete, we might be causing someone to commit a suicide somewhere, and as a result of that, we should feel real guilt and possibly even be prosecuted for doing something that could cause the death of another person.
Well, I give the writer of this article an A-plus for chutzpah, because it takes real nerve to make the leap that she has made. I know the leaders of Exodus International personally, and I've worked alongside them for years, and I know very well that they did not withdraw their support for that particular program, the Day of Truth, out of pressure or out of the belief that teaching the biblical truth on sexuality causes teens to commit suicide. My understanding from those involved is that they withdrew simply because that was not a priority part of their ministry. But they certainly have not changed their position, and they would never capitulate to a statement like that. But again, I think this is the rewriting of terminology to say that basically if you hold a belief system about human sexuality that is traditional, you are thereby guilty of causing homosexual teenagers to take their own lives. And I got to tell you, Hank, in a courtroom, if I was an attorney who knew that he didn't have a very good case, then I wouldn't argue the merits of my opponent's case. I would simply say that my opponent's beliefs cause death and misery, so my opponent should be silenced. What we're seeing here is not a debate over the merits of pro-gay claims or over the distinctions between normal and abnormal human sexuality. We're seeing an attempt to persuade the culture that the biblical message on human sexuality is dangerous and has to be silenced, without giving that biblical message a fair hearing.
What's interesting, and you've talked about this in previous broadcasts, but I want you to underscore it again, is that we are on a slippery slope. And a lot of people might think that that in itself is rhetoric, and that is going overboard in some sense. But consider Peter Singer. He's a well-renowned Princeton ethicist. So he's an ethicist, not just an ethicist, but a Princeton ethicist. And he now makes clear that sex across the species barrier should not be viewed as an offense to our dignity as human beings, and points out that you can have mutually satisfying sexual activities, and the example he gives is sexual activities with dogs. Now, if we have an ethicist who is saying that the barrier should not be as narrow as man with woman or woman with man, should not be as narrow as man with man or woman with woman, but perhaps we should consider that it is not an indignity to human nature to cross the species barrier. If he's saying that, then how can Kirsten Powers say that it is absolutely silly and arbitrary, disconnected from the real world, to make a statement about homosexuality?
And in fact, the arrogance of her remark is stunning, Hank. In the real world, as in the world we live in, states across this nation have passed laws underscoring the traditional definition of marriage. The majority of people polled in this nation believe that the proper definition of marriage is a union between one man and one woman. That is the real world, and it really shows a disconnect from the real world to say otherwise. You know, I think that part of what is so unfair about the way she is framing this issue is she seems to be saying that traditionalists or believers who hold the traditional biblical viewpoint would deny homosexuals the right to have relations with each other. That is not what we are attempting to do. We recognize that man has free will, and we are not attempting to force homosexual people to abstain from adult-to-adult relationships. We believe that such relationships are wrong, but we are not to imprison or penalize those who engage in them. What we are saying is we believe there is a specific definition of marriage that should not be diluted, not because of theological reasons, but for the betterment and the preservation of the culture itself. And by the way, I've written in the Christian Research Journal about this issue myself and pointed out there are a number of secular studies, not conducted or researched by Christians, that indicate that a society that recognizes the stabilizing influence of the male-female monogamous union, particularly as it applies to child rearing, is a society that is more likely to maintain its stability. So there are very practical reasons for promoting the position we do.
Talk to Joe Dallas, if you can stick with me for just a moment. I want to ask you one more question on the other side of the break. Christians are being cowed into silence. What can we do about it? We'll talk to Joe Dallas on the other side of the break, and then we'll go right to your question. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the modern environmental movement, secular environmentalists have claimed that historic Christianity is largely responsible for today's environmental problems. The issue, however, is not what Christians think or how they behave. It's what the Bible teaches with regard to environmental stewardship. Should Christians be concerned about the environment, and to what extent? Dan Story answers this very question. The average American spends some 5 hours a day watching television. As a dominant cultural medium, television deserves serious attention from apologists who wish to demonstrate the difference between ideas promoted in popular culture and those within the Christian worldview. Author and media critic Robert Velarde demonstrates how to use this medium to reach our society and defend your faith. All of this and more can be found in the pages of the Christian Research Journal. To start your subscription today, contact the Christian Research Institute at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or go online to equip.org. Don't change the station. We'll be right back with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast in a moment.
It is reading and interpreting the passage in light of what the Bible says, not my imagination.
You've always appreciated the thoughtful, biblically-based answers you hear from Hank on the Bible Answer Man. But how can you benefit from Hank's input and instruction in your personal quiet times? You can with the Legacy Study Bible. Hank Hanegraaff has helped to assemble what could be the most helpful Bible you've ever read. Informative and educational articles are written by Hank using acronyms that he regularly uses on the Bible Answer Man, including LIGHTS, showing how to understand the Bible, MAPS, demonstrating how the Bible is divinely inspired and preserved, DOCTRINE, summarizing essential Christian doctrine, and FEAT, an apologetic on Christ's resurrection.
Order the Legacy Study Bible, edited by Hank Hanegraaff, by calling 888-7000-CRI or online at www.equip.org. Don't forget to ask about the personalized edition. As an organization, the Christian Research Institute will not compromise nor submit to political correctness, no matter the cost, because truth matters. We have the spiritual resources necessary for you to prevail in the battle for truth. CRI equips you with well-researched tools to identify truth from error, right from wrong. But we can't do this without your support. We need you to partner with us in prayer and with your financial gifts so together we can continue to impact the world with the transforming power that only Jesus Christ can offer. Will you stand with us today? Learn how to become a Bible Answer Man supporter by calling 888-7000-CRI or just go to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. In Ephesians 5:15, 16, Paul admonishes believers to be very careful how you live, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Today, evidence abounds of the growing evil in our modern day culture. False teachers and New Age cults continue to seduce millions with their empty promises and false philosophy. Subscribers to the Christian Research Journal know they will regularly receive timely information on the latest religious trends, as well as practical tips on dealing with the challenges to the Christian faith in a fallen world. We encourage you to become a Bible Answer Man support team member through a monthly giving commitment. To thank you, you will receive a free subscription to our award-winning magazine, The Christian Research Journal. For more information on a simple way to become a Bible Answer Man support team member, go online to equip.org. Again, that's equip.org. Or call us at 888-7000-CRI. The miracle of God wrapped in human flesh is what we celebrate at Christmas. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. You'll see the story of Jesus' birth in a whole new way with The First Christmas, The True and Unfamiliar Story by Paul Meyer, our gift to you this month in appreciation for your support. To send your generous gift and receive this beautiful hardcover book, just call 888-7000-274 or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. And now, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. We'll go right to your questions in a moment. Right now, I'm talking to Joe Dallas. He is the program director of Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California. It's a Christian counseling service to men dealing with sexual addiction, homosexuality, and other sexual relational problems. And he's a member of the American Association of Christian Counselors and author of quite a number of great books on this subject, which you can find on the World Wide Web at equip.org. He's also a contributor to the Christian Research Journal. If you are not subscribing to the Christian Research Journal, you want to do so immediately. I'm constantly referencing articles by Joe and others, including yours truly in the Christian Research Journal. So subscribe today on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Before the break, Joe, I mentioned the fact that Christians are being cowed into silence, because if they speak out or harp on homosexuality in any way, even the most benign way, then they are called bigots or homophobes, in some way being publicly depreciated. And as a result of it, many Christian leaders are being silenced or they are capitulating. You have now an eHarmony website in which dating services for homosexuals are being promoted, and that by a Christian.
Yes. Well, I think that speaks to a broader problem, Hank. I think we are living in a time when the modern church largely has lost the sense of priority. We seem to be very anxious to please the world. And when we are more anxious to please the world than we are to please God, when we filter our message through the lens of what the world will or will not accept, then that tells me that we don't understand our role in the world. And I think homosexuality is an excellent example as a topic, because you're right, more and more Christians, and I'm sad to say, more and more Christian leaders are sort of shucking and jiving when they're asked to give a clear explanation of their belief on homosexuality. In fact, I find this interesting, Hank. If you listen to many leaders now when they are interviewed on secular media, the question of the exclusivity of Jesus Christ is one that they will often duck or be very vague about. Is there only one way to the Father? Is Jesus the only way? Is there such a place as hell? Is man inherently sinful? And what is the normal definition of human sexuality according to Scripture? And those are four topics I find more and more Christian leaders are becoming very vague about and very, very frightened to offend on. And I think that that tells me we are either believing what the world says about human sexuality, or, more likely, we are simply falsely assuming that our primary job is to make nice with the culture, and if the culture is disapproving of us, we must change our message.
And the
that is a dangerous place for the church to be.
Exactly. And the reason I bring up this subject in general is the average person reading this article by Kirsten Powers, again, she's a political analyst on Fox News, the average person reading this article, I fear, does not have the discernment skills so that they can see between that which is clearly misconceived, misconstrued, and misstated, and that which is true. There is a grain of truth in this article. I mean, one of the things that Kirsten Powers is pointing out is that in the church, there are people that are harping on homosexuality, but they don't seem to be all that concerned about divorce or other sexual perversions or sexual sin such as adultery. And therefore, they've set up a double standard. And in many ways, as she points out, Christians are, and she's not using these words, but this is the idea, are merely a microcosm of the culture, and therefore, why should we harp on homosexuality?
Well, you're right. There is truth in that. I think that many Christians, not all, but many Christians, have elevated homosexuality to an unbiblical sort of special sin status while winking at other sexual sins that the Bible condemns just as strongly. Winking both at divorce and sex before marriage and adultery and the use of pornography. And these are all things that, of course, the church needs to take more seriously. But the answer is not to abandon all standards, but rather to be more equitable in the way that we are observing the standards. Jesus did not say, take the speck out of your own eye, or take the log out of your own eye and leave it at that. He said, take the log out of your own eye so you can see more clearly to remove the speck in another when necessary.
Last question. Peter Singer, I mentioned him earlier. He's the Princeton ethicist.
Yes.
And I'm not going to quote him completely just because his language is so abominable that I can't quote it completely.
But we all appreciate that, Hank. By the way, just hearing what you said earlier was enough. Good heavens.
But this is what he says. Sex with animals, and this is a direct quote, does not always involve cruelty. I have some ellipses here just because of the language.
Yeah.
Not everyone objects to being used by her or his dog in this way, and occasionally mutually satisfying activities may develop. I have some more ellipses because of the language. It ceases to be an offense to our status and dignity as human beings. Your response?
This is the furthering of an erosion of definition and clarity. It is, I think, the natural progression when you start chipping away at God-ordained boundaries and definitions, you lose an intellectual framework for maintaining any clarity when it comes to sexual or physical pleasure. And I think this should come as no surprise to anyone who recognizes the reality of the slippery slope. Indeed, that's an overused term, but it's an accurate one. It certainly is apt to this. And I just want to remind our listeners, you're talking about a Princeton ethicist. You're not talking about some drug-addled, maniacal individual who nobody would give credibility to. This is someone in the upper echelons of the educational establishment who is plainly saying that bestiality can be legitimate. And I think this speaks to the downward spiral that we are on, and that should be a wake-up call to anyone concerned about the culture and the church.
Last comment from you. I am on the Bible Answer Man broadcast telling it like it is. There's always a price to be paid, particularly when Christians in general look more like the culture than first century or New Testament Christianity. So it's easy for me to say that Neil Clark Warren capitulated to the homosexual lobby, and therefore he now has an eHarmony dating service for homosexuals. But
yes,
had he not done that, there would have been an enormous price to pay. Doing this show today will most certainly lose me contributions. No question, No ifs, ands, or buts. It will hurt us financially. Given the reality that if you speak out in this way, you are going to pay a financial price, how do you perhaps start to rationalize a little bit and say, you know, the platform's important. I'm doing a lot of good with the platform. If I tell people what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear, I'm going to lose the platform. So I've got to play both sides of the field. Your response?
I think that that type of thinking implies the person sees their ministry or their service or indeed their very life as all built up in the natural. If I was thinking like a politician or like someone who wanted to be popular or just a secular businessman, then I would say that argument makes sense. If we believe, though, that our ministries and our work are God-ordained, we must then conclude that God will protect his work and his workers. And Hank, we can't stress this enough. We are entering a time of fear. We are going to see challenges to tax-exempt status over the issue of homosexuality. We will see lawsuits. We will see more public ridicule. We will see more leadership taking the position that our position is homophobic. We will see more celebrities coming out and saying that it is hateful to hold the traditional view. It is going to be hard to maintain that position with clarity. There will be a price to pay. And I want to challenge our listeners, indeed all of us, to remember what we are here for. We were never put here to make everyone happy or to be rich and comfortable. We're stewards of truth, and we are going to answer at the judgment seat of Christ for how we have stewarded the truth.
Joe Dallas, he is the program director of Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California. And he's a contributor to the Christian Research Journal, a great friend, and I appreciate your comments on today's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Always a pleasure, Hank. Thank you.
And one more reason to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. This is a journal that no Christian home should be without. We deal with the cutting-edge issues that are making a difference in our culture. We don't pull any punches. We take it as it is. We do what we do. Because truth matters. And the Christian Research Journal is a magazine that no Christian home should be without. Right now, when you join the Bible Answer Man monthly support team, you are replacing people that are leaving the support team because of stands that we take. But we have to do, as Joe has so aptly pointed out, what we do, not for prosperity or popularity, but rather because truth matters. And we want to continue equipping you. So even when we ask you to give and to support, we want to put resources into your hands so that you learn discernment skills, because that's the issue. How does the average person discern between truth and error in an article by Kirsten Powers, a Fox News contributor in USA Today, the forum? How do you do that? You need discernment skills. The journal teaches you discernment skills. When you join the monthly support team, the next six issues of the Christian Research Journal are a way of saying thank you. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can also talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI, and I will be back with your questions on the other side of the break. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. We'll start taking your questions in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
What is it about wills and trusts that makes us uncomfortable? Even we as believers find that about 70% of us do not have a current will. But of course, 100% of us are going to be enjoying eternity with the Lord. I've heard it said that a charitable estate plan may be the single greatest act of stewardship in our entire life. It's both a privilege and a responsibility to be taken seriously. The Christian Research Institute is delighted to provide an estate plan organizer on our website that makes this process both informative and easy.
Once you've filled out the organizer, you can have it reviewed for any suggestions or additional assistance, and you can receive a referral to a Christian attorney in your state that can help you put the documents in place at a reduced rate. To have our friends at PhilanthroCorp contact you to see if a gift annuity is right for you, go to our website at www.equip.org and click on the Donate Now button, and then click on Planned Giving. Don't touch that dial. The Bible Answer Man will return right after these messages.
Hank Hanegraaff has answered thousands of questions while hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Now, the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition offers concise and well-crafted answers to over 170 questions that stumble seekers and galvanize skeptics against the historic Christian faith. This beautiful leather hardbound edition contains all the questions and answers from the Bible Answer Book Volumes 1 and 2, plus all new answers to some of today's tenacious questions such as, does Mormonism really teach that Jesus is the spirit brother of Satan? And did Jesus make a crucial historical blunder in the Gospel of Mark? And that's not all. With each entry, Hank offers scripture references specifically related to the subject matter and recommends resources for further study to better equip you. Get your copy of this attractive 550-page leather hardbound book when you call 888-7000-CRI or order on our secure website at www.equip.org. That's equip.org.
And don't forget to ask about the personalized edition. It's the 21st century, and Christianity is still in crisis.
I have equality with God.
Whatever is done on earth, a human must give God permission to do it.
Some of you better go down to that Lexus and Mercedes dealership and just sit down in one of those things with that leather all over it.
Poor folks, get ready to come out of poverty.
Yes.
And when you call in and make that faith promise of $3,000.
Millions are deceived by false teachings and fallacious hopes. But there is tremendous news. Order Hank Hanegraaff's Christianity in Crisis 21st Century and become equipped to reach those lost in this generation of superstar faith teachers. To order Christianity in Crisis 21st Century, call toll-free 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. That's equip.org. Don't forget to inquire about the limited leather edition. Christmas. What does it mean? How can we know the historical accuracy of the incarnation accounts? When was Jesus born? Who were the wise men? What was the first Christmas really like? In his book, The First Christmas, The True and Unfamiliar Story, Paul Meyer helps you explore the who, what, when, and how of Christ's birth. To say thank you for your faithful support this month, we'll send you The First Christmas, a beautifully illustrated hardcover book that distinguishes historical fact from fiction, deepening your understanding of Emmanuel, God with us. Please send your gift today so you can receive The First Christmas in plenty of time to enrich your holiday or serve as a gift to a loved one. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. It's not too much to say that truth is under siege in the postmodern world. So often, those who see truth as relative, subjective, or pragmatic are seen as tolerant and enlightened. Conversely, those who see truth as objective and grounded in the person and work of Jesus Christ are considered intolerant or even arrogant. As an organization, the Christian Research Institute will not compromise nor submit to political correctness, no matter the cost, because truth matters. We have the spiritual resources necessary for you to prevail in the battle for truth. CRI equips you with well-researched tools to identify truth from error, right from wrong. But we can't do this without your support. We need you to partner with us in prayer and with your financial gifts so together we can continue to impact the world with the transforming power that only Jesus Christ can offer. Will you stand with us today? Learn how to become a Bible Answer Man supporter by calling 888-7000-CRI or just go to our website at equip.org. Now let's get back to the Bible Answer Man with your host, Hank Hanna Graff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And do remember, for your gift this month, I'll send you either the Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season. That devotional starts December 1st and goes to December 25th, or The First Christmas by Paul Meyer, The True and Unfamiliar Story. You can check both gifts out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Let's go right to the phone lines. Dr. Rod is listening in Arkansas. Hi, Rod.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My question is, my wife and I have a business, and how do you handle a situation where you have a person come and apply for an opening that you have, and you figure out that he is a homosexual, but he completely qualifies for the position 100%. How do you handle that situation where, you know, my wife and I are leaders in the church, so we, you know, we have biblical principles and have standards and all that. So how do you handle a situation like that? And they continue to call back and say, you know, have you filled the position? And you want to hire the guy because he more than qualifies.
Well, right. But we're not called as Christians to discriminate against people. Which is to say, as Christians, what we want to do is reach and not repel. And as a Christian leader, what you want to do is use every opportunity to reach people with the goodness and the grace of God. Now, I can't speak to your particular business because I don't know about it, but let's say, hypothetically, that I'm a hospital administrator, and I specialize in the treatment of cancer. Well, I would want the very best cancer specialists on my staff. In fact, I can speak personally to this. If I have cancer, and I don't know that I do, but if I had cancer, I would want to be very certain that I find the best cancer specialist. I wouldn't say, is he Jewish or is he an Orthodox Christian? I wouldn't say, is he gay or is he straight? I'd want the very best cancer specialist. So I don't think that we're talking about trying to isolate people from jobs or from positions. I think what we're talking about is transforming the culture, which is to say being change agents in the culture. And actually telling people what they need to hear as opposed to what they want to hear. Now, on the same basis, I think that legitimately, if you are a Christian ministry that has a strong stance with respect to morality, as codified by God in the infallible repository for redemptive revelation, then someone who is a homosexual is not going to want to work in that environment because it is counter to everything that they stand for.
Right.
So often we set up a hypothetical situation because the homosexual wouldn't want to work in that situation because it rubs against the grain of their worldview. So what does this get at? At the base of it, it gets at the very thing that we should be about as Christians. We should learn discernment skills so that we can use our well-reasoned answer as opportunities to be a change agent in the culture. The problem is not homosexuality. The problem isn't pagans doing what pagans do. The problem is Christians not doing what Christians are called to do, and that is being salt and light. If we're not salt and light, if we're not a light on a hill, then certainly the culture is going to go in the wrong direction. So we can stand here and bemoan the fact that our culture is corroding around us, or we can determine that we are going to be first century New Testament Christians in the 21st century. And we are going to, as Joe Dallas so ably pointed out on the broadcast in the first and second segment today, we are going to stand for truth no matter what the cost. we're going to recognize that our job is not to be prosperous or popular or politically correct. Our job is to do what we do because truth matters, because ultimately, whether you are heterosexual or homosexual, if you are without Christ, when Christ returns, you will, on the basis of the word of the one who spoke and the universe leapt into existence, spend an eternity apart from Christ because you choose not to love and serve him.
Right.
That's the reality.
So with you saying that, are you saying to hire the person and try to influence him or her that away? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think as Christians we need to set up an artificial we-they siege mentality against the world.
Right.
I have.
I don't see any different. I mean, I'm totally against that. But what's the difference in hiring someone that's just a non-believer? I mean, because I've got people in my office that, I mean, if they die, they're not saved. So if they die, they're going to the same place anyway. You know.
Well, I think as an employer, what you want to do is look at the qualifications of a person holistically. You don't want to dichotomize. You want to look at a person holistically because you want a person who is going to represent your organization in the way that you want your organization represented, because you want the very best product delivered in the very best way, impacting the end user in the most respectable way possible. So you have to take all those factors into consideration. But if, on the whole, you have the most qualified person in a particular niche, and that niche is filled best by that person, as an employer, you have to look at that seriously.
Right.
I mean, I don't think this is about discrimination. And again, as I said, it's not about a we-they siege mentality against the world.
Right.
Ultimately, we're trying to reach the world. I mean, this is like saying that Jesus Christ would have avoided prostitutes and sinners during his earthly sojourn. He didn't do that, and the
right.
Pharisees didn't like it a whole lot.
Sure. Okay. All right. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. I want to go back to the phone lines, talk to Michael. He's in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
All right. Hey, one of my questions were, I always hear that one will say that the commandments were done away with at Christ's death and that we were only saved by grace. But I'm aware of that the Ten Commandments stand fast and forever and that they cannot be changed because it points out sin in one's life and it corrects us.
Yes.
And one of my main issues were that they cannot be changed.
But well, I think the issue here is an issue that's easily addressed. You can't simply talk about the law in general. You need to be specific because you're right. There are uses of law given in the Bible. One of the uses is to maintain order in society. So laws that maintain order within culture are not abrogated. There are laws that reveal sin. Those laws are not abrogated. But there certainly are civil and ceremonial laws that have been fulfilled in Jesus Christ. Just as there are laws that engage a theocratic culture that are no longer relevant for us today. For example, do we want to be slavishly bound to Old Testament laws by which if you violate a law such as that, you're going to be killed? Because according to the Mosaic law, within the context of a theocratic kingdom, anyone who does any work on the Sabbath must be put to death.
Exactly.
But the Apostle Paul says Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, for it is written, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. The Sabbath was a shadow of the things to come. The reality is found in Jesus Christ. That does not abrogate the law, but demonstrates that Jesus Christ is the reality that fulfills the law. And as a result of that, we still set aside a day, but now we do it because we're recognizing publicly that it is in Christ we have our Sabbath rest.
Exactly. And see, that was one of my biggest issues, because in creation, you know, the word says that thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day. So, and he sanctified it and blessed it, which means he set it aside for holy use. And from what I'm getting at by looking at my calendar, as you look in April, it says Good Friday, the day that Christ was crucified. And then Easter Sunday was the first day of the week. He said that he rose on the first day. So in between those 2 days, we have the seventh day, which is Saturday. So, and then when we look at Isaiah
66. Yeah, you got to get to it quickly because I'm almost out of time.
Yeah, we get to Isaiah 66, 22 and 23. He says, and it shall come to pass till from one moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh will come and worship before him.
Yeah, so what's the point? You got to get it to it quickly. I only have about 30 seconds.
It's basically saying that still today that the Sabbath is being kept, and it cannot be done away with because Jesus...
Well, here's what I'm going to have to do, because I am out of time. You can hear the music winding down the time. I'm going to stay in the studio for an extra hour. Once we go off the air, we'll continue taking your calls. So if you're hanging on, please don't go away. I'll get to your question in just a few moments. If you're dialing in and you want your answer, your question answered the next hour, here's the number to start dialing right now, 888-ASK-HANK. But the bottom line here is, I've written about this in the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, and I say that for the emerging Christian church, the most dangerous snare was a failure to recognize that Jesus was the substance that fulfilled the symbol of the Sabbath. Again, the Cliff Notes, in Christ we have our Sabbath rest. We'll see you next time with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff could very well change your mind about coming events and why a proper understanding of biblical prophecy matters so much. The Apocalypse Code addresses today's most asked prophecy questions, but more than that, it reveals why answering them correctly matters so much in today's world. Yet this book does not offer another model of the end times. Rather, it provides a method by which you can read the Bible for all it's worth. Now available in softcover, you can order your copy at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274, or online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is furnished by the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because truth matters.
Now, more than ever, today's believer who wants to stay informed needs to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal.
The number of patients seeking plastic surgery has skyrocketed in the past decade. In his article titled Self-Esteem from a Scalpel, The Ethics of Plastic Surgery, Richard J. Poupard explains how we can discern when it is appropriate to seek the aid of plastic surgery. The new atheists call God's commands to kill the Canaanites genocide. Yet a closer look at the horror of the Canaanites' sinfulness reveals that God's reason for commanding their death was not genocide, but capital punishment, as described by Clay Jones. Other articles include Should Christians Be Environmentalist? The Negative Effects of Margaret Sanger, Television as the New Literature, and much more.
Call CRI and start your subscription today. 888-7000-CRI. You'll also see it online at equip.org.
Christmas. What does it mean? How can we know the historical accuracy of the incarnation accounts? When was Jesus born? Who were the wise men?
what was the first Christmas really like? In his book, The First Christmas, The True and Unfamiliar Story, Paul Meyer helps you explore the who, what, when, and how of Christ's birth. To say thank you for your faithful support this month, we'll send you The First Christmas, a beautifully illustrated hardcover book that distinguishes historical fact from fiction, deepening your understanding of Emmanuel, God with us. Please send your gift today so you can receive The First Christmas in plenty of time to enrich your holiday or serve as a gift to a loved one. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.